So, we had introduced this topic yesterday, and essentially we got up to Rivash. I brought the Rivash in today to read with you. I'm not sure whether, from a time perspective, should we do it inside or not. But, especially now today, you had a chance maybe to see the Rivash inside. A lot of you had a chance to see it. So you get the basic points, maybe you won't read it word for word. But essentially, the question really that we start with here, yesterday we mentioned that a major chakira, which really stands at the top of this whole issue, is how do we view Jewish marriage? And are we expecting that in order for this to be a valid kiddushin, what we're talking about here is we're talking about the bia of the couple to be considered kiddushin, even without overt intent for that. So what intent would suffice? We mentioned our Gemara in Gittin about Chazakah, Ein Adam Osa Bilas Nos. So the question of what would happen if there is a situation where there is no halachic kiddushin, either because there is a civil marriage or a Jewish marriage that is missing some of the components of kiddushin. Again, they may not be the same as each other, may have a different status, but in one situation or the other, is it possible to assume that the bia comes with a kavanas kiddushin? So we mentioned that really there is a meta issue here as far as the whole Masechus kiddushin, that if our assumption is that kiddushin is something added on to the concept of marriage, which pre-existed the Torah, but kiddushin is a new level. So the fact that the couple may be interested in marriage doesn't necessarily have anything to do with kiddushin. So maybe it's only a question of whether this act should constitute specifically halachic kiddushin, and we need to find that kavana somewhere. So how do we relate to the statement in the Gemara of Ein Adam Osa Bilaso Bilaznus? Does that apply everywhere? Does it apply to everyone? Does it apply in every situation? So if you see the Rivash, and again maybe in the interest of time we won't go through every word together, but essentially, he talks about a situation of anusim. Anusim, in this case, means Muranos, basically people who had converted out of Judaism because of the circumstances, and they now ended up having a relationship with the marriage of the priest, with a komar, and the question of whether that should constitute kiddushin. So, here maybe we could skip to the end. That yesh lahashu v'lomar the other after from the tavor filo dasa to make owner shosogim stam rul shem kedushin ball. Even if you think that b is normally shem kedushin, hacha benidon zel lo ball shem kedushin. Why the kevan shehisnu b'nesuin v'chukos haov dekochavim uveis v'mosa mipi akomar. Since they went through the process of having a non-Jewish marriage, a religion other than Judaism. Harehu ki'ilu pirshu. This is really the key word here. The key line here. Ki'ilu pirshu. She'ein daitam l'shem kiddushin kedas ma'ishu yehudas. They are not interested in Jewish marriage. El b'darche olte kochavim v'she'einan b'toras kiddushin begin. They're interested in non-Jewish marriage. That's what they basically said. V'yemkein eina k'nesua. So therefore, she is not like a married woman. Then he goes on to say, you can't have anyone more priestistic than somebody who is following idolatry, and their actions display this. So also in this situation, if they decide to get married, so then there is a din of chuppas nida, and chuppas of dam chimud. They have to wait for 7 days before getting married. Ha'isat zricha leisha zayin nikiyim, ha'isat mechez giz nida. So we assume she's a nida, v'lo tov v'nidusa, she didn't go to mikvah. Shrei lo hoya lehen az achar gzeir mikvah tar, they weren't in the mikvahs. So apparently you see this man is now worried about Nida, and here's again a key line, also, if he's willing to engage Mr. Kares, how should we assume that he's so scared of the relatively lesser Isser of Penuya? No, how do you know?
Why is there a Nida problem with this? Not a love marriage.
So, yes, it does. It's a very important point to be emphasized. And it's interesting, actually, because that point tangentially is going to connect to this. And maybe I'll mention this point again in a minute, because it's actually a tangential meeting up with this sugya. But yes, first point to mention is that Nida is not connected to marriage at all. That I'll say more about that in a few minutes. But yes, the short answer is yes, that an unmarried couple is absolutely subject to Yis and Nida. So here, apparently, there's no Nida awareness, no Nida careness. So therefore, if that's the case, so if he's not worried about Nida, why should we assume he's worried about Pnuya? So what do you see? There's a couple of things that the Rav Ash is saying here about the Chazaka, the Mosa, Bilasa, Bilasmas. A number of Chidushim that you might not have otherwise thought as obvious that emerges from this tshuva. I'm categorizing them in my mind as at least two, or two levels. Anyone want to take a stab at what I'm talking about? No one's got half a hand up, Jonah's got half a hand up, so together you have a whole hand up.
Yeah, let's speak together.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Word.
Okay, so the fact that he's bringing a kalachomer to a certain extent by saying he's creating a scenario where they're not being sakir and not nida. Mm-hmm. And once he does that, then he can say, well, they're definitely not worried about Yisrbiyas and Nuya, and then he can get rid of them and that would be not the most important.
Right, so that is what he says, but so what do you see from that? What is the Kiddush that's implicit?
Oh, that you can use an umdina. The umdina is good enough for Das Bekishin.
I have windows that are not treating as well today. So that the umdina of what?
The umdina of Eidna, the most sabilas is good enough for Das Bekishin.
I think it's coming in the other direction,
okay.
Right? That I think that he's undermining. Basically, Noah, did you want to say something similar, something different?
Very
different. Very different, okay, so you don't want to say it anymore?
My point was going to be about like the nature of Kiddushin, his context, that there's some sort of like theological level that is added to it, that it has to, that if you have Kiddushin in other contexts outside of Judaism, then that doesn't work, and seemingly we didn't see that, if there's any requirement for that before in other sources.
All right, so the truth is that's also a chiddush, not what I was looking for, but we should emphasize that, right? There's actually, let's say, three chiddushim here. Okay, maybe we'll find more. So let's say there are three chiddushim that come out of this Rav Ash, and it's important to recognize this Rav Ash is quoted by halacha in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, right? So this Rav Ash is not a das yachid or any kind of a unique position here. This Rav Ash carries a lot of weight. You know, in his generation, we don't have explicit chokim on his position, and brought the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So this Rav Ash is really one of the most important makaros on this whole issue. So there are, let's say, three chidushim. Okay, we'll count Noah's, but it's important. There are, let's say, three chidushim that emerge. Right? One is that something external to the act of Bia here can establish the Kavana that you're not interested in Kedushin. In this case, it is the non-Jewish marriage. That's a very significant point. Right? And that could have major implications and applications to other things. Right? It could have applications just off the cuff in three ways. Right? We could try to break that down. So, okay, maybe it covers a situation like he describes where they don't want Jewish marriage, they want non-Jewish marriage or civil marriage. What if they have a situation where they want Jewish marriage, but they're not doing the Jewish marriage kahalacha? Or what if they have a situation where they want Jewish marriage and they are doing it kahalacha, but there's some other mistake that they relied on that for the marriage? What does that do for this situation, like some of the shaylos that we have addressed. So yes, that is a very significant point, even though it wasn't the one I was looking for. So there are two other, which are halves of the same, they're related points, very important yisodos that seem to emerge from the Rivash, and they are at the core of this whole discussion, even though they will be somewhat disputed by more recent achronim. So one is that ein adam osa bilasa bilas nos is not universal. That someone, through their behavior in general, can lose that status. And here, to be clear, we have to kind of split hairs on what we're talking about. Right, why would somebody lose the statement that ein adam osa bilas bilas nos? So you might lose it because the circumstances indicate that this is not meant to be a B.S. Kiddushin. Or you might lose it because you are not somebody who is included in this chazak. Because your behavior in general indicates that you don't care. Right, and you see the Rivash seems to say both. Right, first he says that, oh, they made a statement by having this non-Jewish wedding that they don't want their bia to be kedushin. But then he goes on to say, almost as a separate point, that look, these people are engaged in avodah zara, they're prutzim. So they don't care about bilas nos. It's a fundamentally different way of saying that conclusion. You follow? And not that the circumstances specifically of that night don't lend themselves to that chazaka, but that these are people who are not included in this chazak. It's a whole different angle. Does that make sense? If anyone wants me to clarify?
Yeah, you just say
yeah. Yeah, saying that why would the concept, if normally we would say, you know, the Moshed Kulaz Nus, that if there is a Bia and there's no preceding marriage, that the Bia should count as a marriage. When would we not say that? So you could say, if that's the default, that we should say that, so when does the default change? So you could say the default will only change in a situation where the facts indicate otherwise. Right? So the facts of this situation are that there was something else that was supposed to serve as marriage. So that's where your kavanah was, not on the bia. So that's one reason. And that's a little bit the lesser chiddush. To say that that removes the default position. But the second statement, which is what he goes on to say at the end of his words, is a much bigger chiddush. It's saying that the chazaka doesn't apply to all people. It only applies to people of a certain degree of allegiance to its underlying concepts. And if somebody is a paritz, if somebody is not careful about proper relationships, then we should assume this. Not because of the circumstances of today or tomorrow. Stam, this person, hotzi es atzmo min haklal. He's not in the category of somebody who this applies to. To see A, the difference, and B, why the second one is a much bigger chiddush.
What were the other circumstances in A?
Like A, because since they had this non-Jewish ceremony, so their kavana was that they believe they got married already. So now, so they're bia, they don't think it's bias nos, they think they got married already, so they have no... So yes, it's true, ein adam osa bilas bilas nos. So default, they would have kavana, but they had kavana somewhere else. They thought that they already had their marriage. So for that reason, so they're not excluded from the chazaka, it's just the circumstances are different. While the second chiddush is saying, no, these are people who are outside the scope of the chazaka. It's a very different point. And it's a much bigger chiddush, and I'll discuss in a few minutes why it's so significant, because it's very far from obvious. The third level to his chiddush is once you start distinguishing upon people, distinguishing within people, so then he distinguishes based on a very lumdisha point. Right? And let's make chilukim, let's assume that everyone thinks like the Beis HaMedrash, and that everyone makes their chilukim, even these people who we just called prutzim and otherwise not subscribing to any of the tenets of Judaism, right? That they see everything based on chumras ha'isim. So since Nida is Kares, that's a much bigger deal than premarital relations. And therefore, we should use that logic to see if they fit into the Chazak. If they're not worried about Kares, that'll show us they're not worried about Znus. Which we'll discuss, hopefully now in a few minutes, why one could really challenge such a premise. Because you can challenge that premise from two directions. Right? One, because now we get three levels of chiddush, okay? That this klal does not always apply. Level two, that there are people who are simply completely removed from this klal. And three, that we'll make the evaluation based on the very technical standard of chumras ha'isur. Now, that assumption, that last assumption, is a chiddush for two reasons. The first, most basic reason is, once you have people who aren't religious at all, do they really think in terminology like this is an Isser Lav, and this is an Isser Kares, and this is Misa B'Day Shemayim, and this is a Lav Shem B'Maisa? Presumably not. And then the second question is, do even Lamdanim think that way? Because there, and I could, if we had more time and I was not afraid of the tangent, I could give you more examples completely outside this area that call that into question. Maybe in some other context I will give you such examples. But to give one that's in this context, I believe what Jacob Kamenetsky pointed out, right, that even we as the observant population, we don't really look at every issue through chumras ha'isur. Because what would you say as, let's say you were a rabbi, somebody says to you, he's thinking of marrying two women, one of two women, by one or the other. One who's not going to observe Hilchos Nida, and the other who's not Jewish, who's not going to convert. But he's definitely marrying one of these two. What would you advise?
Non-Jew.
You advise to marry the non-Jew? You believe what?
Well, it's Chai Kares.
So that's exactly his point, right? That, with all due respect, at least a surprising approach, right? I think this young man's parents, who probably came to the help, would probably be quite amazed and probably fire you from the shul. But the, and you know, they might be probably right, which I think is Rebecca's offense. But I think is Rebecca's point, right? That if we see things purely in terms of chumras ha'isur, that's your point, right? That the Jewish woman who's not observing Hilchos Taharas and Mishpacha, it's an Isser Kares. So what's the Isser of intermarriage? Is it Kares? Presumably not. So if we view everything through chumras ha'isur, you're right, so then your conclusion would be correct. But again, so why is this boy's parents going to throw you out of the shul? Because they will feel that marrying a non-observant woman is far, far preferable to marrying a non-Jewish woman, and we would probably agree. We would probably see one, the second one is a much greater deviation from practical halachic Judaism than the first, even though chumras ha'isur doesn't exactly line up. So the Rivash's assumption here that this is how we should think in terms of determining this chazaka, it's a bit chiddush too. Okay, so I think there are three chiddushim here. All of them play a role in determining how the sugya should be addressed. And all of them come up, not necessarily named Rivash or one way or the other, but all of them come up in terms of analyzing various situations. Hi.
I'm not really understanding the chumar ha'isur.
The question is, what's worse, intermarriage or marriage to a Jewish woman who's not observing neither? So if you go purely based on onshin, right, which sometimes is our standard, and very often is, but it's not, you know, it's, I'm wondering how much time to spend on this, because we could spend a lot of time on this, because it's not the only metric, and maybe it is worth, it'll delay us a little bit, maybe it's worth spending a few minutes just to illustrate this outside the context of Nisuin. Maybe I'll give you a few more makomos to look at about this because it's a whole separate topic. But in general, when you want to say you have a choice between two actions, and so you have to do an aveira for whatever reason. You can choose which aveira to do. So what's the lesser of two evils? Do we just go by onesh, or do we go by some other factor sometimes? And so this example, to keep it within Kedushin, this is an example that if you only go by Elmish, you've come to the conclusion that it's better to intermarry than it is to marry a non-observant Jewish woman. Because the Issacharis associated with Nida is not necessarily going to be the Isser that's associated with intermarriage, the fear that's associated with intermarriage. But we wouldn't make that decision. I don't think anybody would advise anyone like that, because we realize that for other reasons, the effect of intermarriage on everything else is much worse than the effect of marrying a Nida, of marrying who's not going to serve Tyrus and Shabbat. So it's not always a faithful metric. It's not always the way to look at things. So to give it, just to very quickly point out some other areas of halacha, there's a Ran. The Ran in Yuma discusses, I'm giving this to look at if you want, but I wasn't expecting to talk about it, but it's just a whole different answer to a tangent. The Ran says, let's say you have a chola on Shabbos, and you need to feed him something that you don't have available right now. You're going to have to be Mechalel Shabbos or do some other Aveira to make it available. So you have two choices. Either you can serve an Aveila that you have available and wouldn't involve any Chalel Shabbos, or you could Shecht an animal. So then you won't have to eat an Aveila, but you'll have to Shecht on Shabbos in order to do this. So what would you say is the lesser of two evils? What would you say you should do? What would you think? Anyone has a feeling about this?
Well, Nevela is your...
It's a
law. It's a law, but not Chayav Karis.
Right.
But you are Chayav Karis if you do Avoda on Yom Kippur.
Yeah, well, let's keep it to Shabbos for a second.
Oh, I thought it was...
No, it's in Yuma, but let's keep it.
I thought that's why you're feeding him, because it's Yom...
Yeah, so let's keep it...
Oh, so then that's...
It's a question of eating Nevela, or
on
Shabbos.
Shabbos.
Sorry?
You sleep on Shabbos is stuck right now.
Still at Shabbos is Chila.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So, if the only thing you think about is the Chumra Sa'isr, so then Shchita on Shabbos is Gila, and the Vela is alive. So you should shech the animal. So the Ran doesn't say like that. Why does he not say like that? Because he introduces a whole other fact. He says, yeah?
Does he say like it's one sin to shech the animal, but every bite of the Vela is a sin?
Yes, exactly. So every bite or every kizayas, sorry?
I don't know where that came from.
Came from the Ran originally. So he said that every act, every kizayas that you'll have of the Nevela is a separate Isser. This is without getting into the question of is the person shechting one person, the person eating a different person. Well, you're not even getting into that. But in terms of just Aveiras being done, right, that if you talk about Nevela, so then you're saying that every act is its own Isser. And if you talk about Shechita, so then you're saying that you're just doing one Aveira, even though that Aveira is a Isser, is an Isser Skila. So the question is, maybe we shouldn't only look at the metric of Chumra Sa'onesh. We should also look at some other metrics that might be relevant. So doing many Aveiros, maybe that's worse. Now, there happens to be, I'll ask you if you can guess this. If I'm about to cite an Achron who creatively develops a whole klal and then examines all of Shas to see if the klal holds up, who would I be quoting now? Okay, with all of this, good compliments to them, but somebody a little older, a little no longer alive. No, I'll go back a little more than that. Not around the time of Reb Chaim, but older than Reb Avadi Yosef. Very different than Reb Avadi Yosef. wrong direction. Oh, bingo, you get the prize. Rav Yosef Engel. So Rav Yosef Engel has a essay in the Sefer Lekach Tov, because this is his style. He has an essay which is called E Ribui Hakamus Machria Es Ha'Echus. You know what that means? Sorry? Yeah, so that's the title of the piece. Ribui Hakamus Machria Es Ha'Echus. So you know the definition between Kamus and Echus is?
Qualitative response.
Yes, exactly. Right. Kamus is quantitative, Hakamut, How much is there? And Eichus is the qualitative. What is the nature of it? Eich, right? What is this? So he has a discussion. Do we say that increasing the quantity of something ultimately triggers a qualitative difference? So should we say that when you do something many times, it becomes something different? And part of the issue is this rod. Right? To what extent should you say that something now, because of something other than Chumras HaYisur, becomes more Chumra? So the very big tangent, which I think this is relevant to, there's a highly, highly sensitive, troubling issue that some poskim really struggled with. And there is a famous chiddush about this in the Sefer Dor Revi. The Dor Revi was named that because he is the fourth generation from the Chasam Sofer. His name was Rav Moshe Glasner. He was named Moshe after his great-grandfather, Chasam Sofer. And he has a fascinating svarim on Sefer Anchua, and he has a major introduction there where he gets into principles of Tarash Baal Peh, which Shachter often talks about. It's a very different style. So an issue that many, that he talks about in the Sefer Anchua, and that many struggle with, is, let's say, Chas V'Shalom, you're in a plane crash. But, Baruch Hashem, you're a survivor. But, Chas V'Shalom, many others don't. Right, so now you're trapped somewhere on the plane, in the mountains somewhere, like that story. And to stay alive, you don't have kosher food to keep you alive. So you have two choices. You have the food that's on the plane, which is not kosher. Right, they had nevelos and treifus in the galley. Or you have one of the slum, you have dead bodies. It's an issur of cannibalism. So there were those who said that cannibalism is not an issur b'feirush from the Torah. It's an issur asay. So an issur lav of nevelos and treifus, maybe that's worse than, as crazy as it sounds, that's not the point, maybe that's worse than cannibalism. It's an issur asay. So that's the discussion, and the Dor Revi has an approach to that, why he says he doesn't think that's true. He thinks that there is kind of a natural law element to the Torah that makes cannibalism usher in a more severe way. But I think he could also take an approach to this where we say that not everything is judged based on Chumras HaYisur. So it's one metric to say, okay, Yisur Lulz HaSeh is more than an Yisur HaSeh. But there are other aspects here also. So you could say, okay, the Chil Hashem aspect and things like that, but you could also throw in, just to get very technical, so I'm going to say it very quickly, there's a minority Deya in the Achronim, which we don't assume like L'Halacha at all, but there's a minority Deya that one is not allowed to take from a dead body, even for Pikuach Nefesh. All the other posts can disagree. But there's a minority Deya like that. So what if we approach the question like this? Right, the Nevelos and Treifus, every Posek in history agrees you can have Mokum Pikuach Nefesh. The dead body, there's at least a minority view that you can't do even the Mokum Pikuach Nefesh. So maybe we should say that's a reason to go for the Nevelos and Treifus. Right? Maybe we shouldn't only look at Lav versus Asay, but here you have to be doche and isser. Maybe you should take the isser that every posek agrees gives way, as opposed to the one that has a minority view not that way. So that's just another example of how chumras isser is not the only way to see things. So here, the Rivash is therefore telling us a third significant chiddush by making this the key element. So now, that was a big unexpected tangent. We'll see how much we can touch into it in the next few minutes. But it does tie into a lot of things that are going on here. So for example, the Radbaz is also one who gets involved in this discussion of saying that there is a scenario where somebody is not going to be credited with the assumption of Eino Adam Osa Bilaso Bilaznos. And what's that scenario? So the scenario he talks about, it seems like a little bit of a steer in the Rabbaz. Because in one place the Rabbaz says, like the Rabashir, that if the couple is clearly not worried about Nida, so then that shows that they're not, you know, the most of Bilas or Bilas and those people. But elsewhere, the Rivash talks about a situation where somebody divorced his wife because she had an affair. And therefore, he's halachically obligated to divorce her, and he's supposed to be usher to her forever. But he decides he misses her too much, and he wants to get back together with her. So in that case, the Rabbaz doesn't seem ready to deprive him of the credit of Einad Mosa Bilas Bilasmus, even though that's also an Isser. And here, if we want to use our metric of Chumra Sayisser, right, so that is less of an Isser than a Nida. Hi. Yeah, in the case of Nida, so he says that if a couple that doesn't care about Nida, then we can't say about them, Eidon Demosa Bilasa Bilasa. But another tshuva, there's a man who's remarrying his unfaithful wife, who he's prohibited to Api Halacha also. And yet, we don't deprive him of this assumption. So what's the difference?
What do you mean by that? In terms of what?
It means that even though he doesn't care about the sister of remarrying his wife, right, and also keep in mind that the sugya of Einot Mos Bilas Bilasnos that we saw yesterday, the Gemara in Gittin, is specifically talking about a man who's back together with his ex-wife. Right? So let's say the ex-wife was unfaithful, so it's not just they decided to get divorced, and now they reconciled, but he was obligated la halacha to divorce her. So and he's obligated not to remarry her. This is an issue. So that guy, we don't deprive of his, you know, the most of Bilasnus credit. And the neither couple we do. So what's the difference? So it says Rav Herzog in the Tshuvas Heichal Yitzchak. Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi of Israel. So says Rav Herzog that there is a difference. What difference could you think besides Karis or Lav or other happens to be in a Hanami that Karis, the Nida is more Chomer, but there's another factor here that he identifies. That's also true. That's an important point. But that Levo Gaspo is more just a question of whether it was B in the first place. Right? So, but what else? There's another whole element here. No,
I'm still kind of confused. How can they have this chazaka if they already committed adultery?
Okay, so then,
like, what does it mean?
Right,
like they still have the chazaka. I can't understand.
Okay, that's a fair question. Also, the fact that at least she did. We don't know if he did, right? But
so then, the categorically, it's,
except that we're more interested in what his kavana is. But she committed adultery in the past. You know, maybe she's done tshuva since then. We don't know if he ever did anything wrong other than this, so...
It doesn't matter.
Well, it might matter if he never did anything wrong. So
it's
his... Right. But he could have theoretically Kavanah's condition here. Right? Just like exactly the scenario in the Mishnah and Gittin. The Mishnah and Gittin is a guy getting back together with his ex-wife. So let's take that exact same scenario. But just know the backstory is the reason they got divorced in the first place is because she was unfaithful. She committed adultery.
He doesn't care about the Israel, why does it matter what the background is?
So that's the pool. He doesn't care about the Isser, so he's willing to live with her despite that Isser. So the question is, what is the impact of that not caring?
But like, what not committed would be if the background was Kadesha versus...
Because if the background was that they just got divorced down. So now the only thing we know about him is that he's back with his ex-wife. So we have to figure out, maybe he does care about everything in Halacha, and... You know, the most of Bilas will be Lasnas. But in this situation, we can add to the mix that he's really prohibited to her. So he doesn't care about that. So he doesn't care about that, but he does care about it on most of Bilas will be Lasnas. But we just said if he doesn't care about Nida, then maybe he doesn't care about this. So how could Nida we throw out of the club? And this we don't throw out of the club. So the Heichal Yitzchak of Herzog adds a whole different metric here. And again, I think this is very valuable because this just establishes how complex and nuanced these questions are, because they're all kinds of different directions to come from. So the element that he adds here is that, what would you say might be the difference between the two yisurim? Without getting into karis or ocean or anything like that, just looking at the yisur of nida and the yisur of remarrying your ex-wife who was unfaithful, what difference could you note between the two?
Like the idea of repetition. Right? Like if it shows up that she's not keeping nida before the marriage, then you could assume that throughout the marriage she won't be keeping nida as well, as opposed to the one time yisur of, I guess, marrying. So, I mean, how often that applies, but you do remarry someone, but you could maybe say that it's a one-time thing that you have an issue of not marrying someone who you have been divorced to because of she slept with someone else.
So the problem is, doesn't seem to work, is the Nodu Hutu points out in the Chuva, which would take us even further of a tangent, if you're about two different contexts, the issue seems to be on their physical relationship in the same way, that each time it would be an issue. So what else is there? There's something else that differentiates them. Something really non-halachic in nature, maybe. Right?
I don't know what the different categorization is of both of them,
mm-hmm.
In terms of if they're considered erba d'oraisa.
So again, I would not necessarily, but I would encourage you to think totally differently. Don't think in halachic categories. Think about psychology. Think about just human thinking in general. Jacob?
Well, we talked about marriage. It's kind of like this trusting, seriousness relationship between
mm-hmm.
two people. So when your spouse cheats on you, like, granted, you might have this idea to take them back, but there's always going to be this mistrust that's always lingering. When by nida, meaning it's an isser, but it's not, meaning something you don't trust them, it's just kind of something they're not so careful about.
Okay.
It's not like
so you're going a little bit farther on the other end, right? So don't think about psychology. So all the way to that. So thinking of something in the middle, we have to be exactly on the dot. So we have 3 minutes. So yeah.
I was going to say like das, that in case of nida for sure there's das, but I was kind of going to say the start of the case of remarriage, the das on her side isn't necessarily there.
Okay, maybe. But again, think of something else. Josh, did you have a
one screen up again?
Okay, so it's similar to what Jacob was saying. So again, that's going very far in that direction. Hi?
I don't know if it's murder, but like one of the reasons why she might be also to him, the one that he divorced and then married somebody else or whatever,
mm-hmm.
is because of the fact that like now he might want to be remarried or just by the fact that she has previously slept with other people, so it's more exciting.
So that's definitely a different direction.
Right.
I mean, you're right that there's those who say that that's why the Yisr of Matsu Shasso in that case, which is a different situation.
Right. So, by Nida, it would just be that this is his wife and she just doesn't follow the halakha. Not coming from a.
Okay, so you all went both ends of the spectrum. So, what I'm looking for, or that's what Herzog says, is something kind of in the middle of that. And that is that the person who doesn't care about Yisr Nida will say to him, wow, you must really not care about halacha. You know why? Because nida is a transient iser. Just wait a few weeks. So to be casual about that shows you really don't care. But when it comes to Isho Shazinsa, this unfaithful wife, so if he's really so in love with her, what eitzah does he have if he wants to remarry her? None. Right? There's nothing he can do about it. So he just has to forget about it forever. So this guy, he can't forget about it forever. So it's a whole different level of taiva, basically. That the situation where the guy isn't caring about nida, so then it just means he doesn't care about halacha, because halacha could be reconciled with his taiva. But in the case of his unfaithful wife, there's no halachic route for him to remarry her. So it could be that if he's just overwhelmingly interested in remarrying her, this is his only option. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's neglectful about other areas of halacha. So that's a fascinating way to distinguish, right? We also find that in other areas of kashrus, the expression you find sometimes in the Gemara is shavek, a shavek hetera of achal isura, right? That we think that somebody who eats non-kosher food, let's say, is worse if he has kosher food in front of him. and leaves that to eat the non-kosher food, that's worse than somebody who's stam hungry and eats non-kosher food because there isn't any non-kosher food around. So that attitude, maybe that's relevant. And then that gets to the question of whether other chilukim that might be relevant, so that we will have to pick up tomorrow while we merge that with our questions.
Thank you all.